Hey there, it's Tony here, and welcome to the Dumb Leaders podcast. Today we're talking about Blockbuster, and we're talking about Canoa. Thanks for tuning in. Hey there, it's Tony here, and welcome to our second episode of the Dumb Leaders podcast. Our first episode last weekend was incredibly well received. We've received some fantastic feedback. We saw a great amount of downloads and listens and streams, and we're really excited about the initial promise that people have jumped on board and joining in the journey. Today on the show, we're going to be sharing a lesson from history around the demise of Blockbuster, and we'll also be talking about a company that's more recent and more relative to us in our current time, and that's a company called Canoa. But first up, let's have a look at Blockbuster, shall we? Now, Netflix has been sort of championed as the reason why Blockbuster was declared bankrupt back in 2010. And I'm not here to say that they didn't have a role to play. In fact, I would say that they were a factor. They were a factor in the demise of Blockbuster. You know, one of the other things that gets bandied around quite frequently online is the fact that on a couple of occasions, Blockbuster had the opportunity to buy Netflix. And, you know, when you go in and you start to dig into some of the research around this, that's true. There was a couple of times when Netflix went cap in hand to Blockbuster. And both times, Blockbuster said no. So, and potentially for the very first time that occurred, Netflix came to Blockbuster, and at that stage, the business model for Netflix was mailing out DVDs. Now, who would have known back then? I mean, Blockbuster, here they were, the number one business in that industry, and one of their competitors who's mailing out DVDs comes to them as a bailout. Now, I'd probably challenge that there's not too many people that would have purchased Netflix at that particular time. But there was another attempt back in 2007 that was probably a little bit more relative and a little bit more recent and a little bit more historical in terms of Blockbuster's demise. But the interesting thing with Blockbuster is that the majority of the reason for their downfall came around because of dumb leadership. There's no other way to describe it. They made some fatal errors in terms of their market, their strategy, and it was dumb. It really was. Now, you know, I listened to Gary Vaynerchuk just recently talk about some of the stats that Blockbuster, some of the surveys that Blockbuster were doing with their customers, and even right up until, you know, the final years that Blockbuster were in existence in the way of video stores. And, you know, he makes a bit of a mockery about the fact that the surveys, their customers were saying they enjoyed going to the stores, they enjoyed picking up the DVDs, they enjoyed reading the back of the DVDs. And that may all very well have been true, that their customers did in fact enjoy going to the stores and picking up the DVDs. But what was happening was this quantum shift that was happening outside of their current base. Their customer base was declining, and there was a quantum shift happening outside of it. So when we look at, you know, some of the dumb things that Blockbuster did during the course of their ultimate demise was, firstly, a large portion of their revenue was being generated by penalising their customers in terms of late fees. Now, there's not too many sound business models where that actually works. So they penalised their customers with late fees, and that was what was driving a large portion of their revenue. So when you're looking at how do you build a business around that? Well, you continue to penalise your customers. So, of course, ultimately Netflix was created because the founder of Netflix got whacked with one of those famous Blockbuster late fee charges. So they're actually the instigator there of the original Netflix, which is really interesting. You know, the other problem that had a huge factor in it. So in 2007, Netflix came to Blockbuster, and, you know, my timeline might be slightly out because, you know, you'd go out there and do a Google search around Blockbuster and you get about three or four derivatives of the storyline. So, and you get different perspectives from different people, and it's really hard to decipher the ultimate facts. But you can pick up the trend, which is what we've done. So in 2007, Netflix came to them again with the opportunity to looking for some level of partnership. Would probably more of what Netflix were looking for than a buyout, and of course that was rejected. Now, if you look at the figures at the time, or just a little bit afterwards, Blockbuster were moving down a digital path. They were moving down a digital path to combat what Netflix were doing. However, a boardroom coup, now listen to this, a boardroom coup, and this was the dumbest bit. This was really the dumbest bit. The problem that happened soon after was that there was a boardroom coup and a new CEO came in, and he changed the Blockbuster plan. And by changing the plan based around customer surveys, they changed the plan and they pulled out and drastically withdrew around their internet strategy. Now, back then, I mean, we're talking 07, 08, 09, they went bankrupt in 2010. So in 2010, the internet was a thing. You know, it's not like it was 2000 where the internet was still looked upon with some level of suspicion. This is 2009, 2010, you know, where the internet was here. Most people were connected in some way, shape and form full time. So the internet was here and they drastically pulled out of their internet efforts. Now, why would you do that? And then 18 months after the change of strategy, basically Blockbuster had lost 85% of the capital value of the company. 85%. And it wasn't necessarily long after that that they declared bankruptcy. They continued to promote some encouraging statements to the media. And it's, you know, within the notes on this podcast, we'll post a timeline or one of the more valid timelines that we believe that we found. So they continued to post quite encouraging news to the stock market and the share market. And then ultimately, just a couple of months after an encouraging post, they declared bankruptcy. So when you think about the strategy of revenue coming from late fees and not necessarily being a customer-focused business, when you think about the strategy of removing themselves out of the digital arena and the internet game, I'm starting to realize that Netflix, while they had a role in the demise of Blockbuster, they weren't the main thing. It was dumb leadership that was the main thing. And it was myopic leadership. It was leadership that wasn't looking anywhere else outside of what was happening within their business. And they thought because they were the biggest business, the biggest company in the space, that nothing bad could happen. As we saw, something bad happened. So how do we maintain situations like this? Well, first up, the key here is about relevancy. So as a leader of any business or as a leader within yourself, the key is to stay relevant. You know, recently we saw Nokia, you know, another company that failed to stay relevant. We'll talk about that in just a little sec as well. And they recently re-released the Nokia 3310. Now, I think everyone at one stage had a Nokia 3310. And they released it again because they saw a market for retro goods. And, you know, that's good luck to them. Good luck to them. I certainly won't be buying a 3310. But one of the key things here is that you either stay relevant or you go retro. And the key for your business and your leadership success is to stay relevant. Who wants to be retro? Retro is such a small marketplace to be playing in. So the key is, number one, always check the environment. Changes are always happening around you. Always happening around you. I had the pleasure of listening to one of the former CEOs of Video Easy, which is an Australian chain that suffered pretty much the same demise as what Blockbuster did. And I remember clearly saying that we knew it was coming, it just happened so quick. We knew it was coming, it just happened so quick. Now, let me just share something around that. We knew it was coming, it just happened so quick. Back in 2004, industry analysis around the video DVD market and the industry was saying it had a five-year lifespan in 2004. When did Blockbuster declare bankruptcy? 2010. We knew it was coming, it just happened so quick. I'll leave you to create your own judgments around that. But I'm sort of thinking, if they're listening to the analysts and if they're looking at the shift in the consumer tastes and the shift in the market, that they may have been able to deal with that a little bit better than what they did. Number two, be aware of the cost of missing something. Now, there is an amazing TED Talk done by a lady called Tricia Wang, and it's about big data and Nokia. See, I told you I'd talk about Nokia. Now, Nokia, once again, were listening to their big data that was saying their customers were incredibly happening. But all the while, Tricia was seeing this shift within the Chinese teenage market or young adult market, where they were moving and they were talking about smartphones. And she was seeing this shift from a human side. And the shift wasn't necessarily showing up on the data side as yet. So Nokia were making decisions based around what their big data was telling them, that people loved their phones. Well, we all know what happened to Nokia. They missed the shift. They missed it. Their data was telling them everything was fine, but the world shifted and they missed it because the data hadn't caught up. So you need to be aware of the cost of missing something. So you've continually got to be scanning the environment. You've got to look to see what's happening. And you've got to be looking for those subtle shifts, because those subtle shifts can lead into huge market-changing shifts. The last thing, disrupt yourself. Shake complacency. Steer the ship while rocking the boat was a saying that one of my dear friends uses all the time. You have to steer the ship. You have to rock the boat. The minute you feel comfortable, get uncomfortable again and keep getting uncomfortable. Because if you follow that rule, you'll forever be growing, you'll forever be learning, and you'll be forever being with the capability to pivot and change and shift, and not like some of these major corporations that fail to see it. So just go through those three steps again. Always check your environment, be aware of the cost of missing something, and continue to disrupt yourself and get uncomfortable. Don't be the next Blockbuster. Continue to be the leader that challenges themselves and makes themselves better at what it is that they do. Hey there and welcome back. It's Tony again, a Dumb Leaders podcast. But let's talk about something that created a little bit of news in Silicon Valley recently. It's about a startup called Canoa. And Canoa were marketing wireless earbuds. Now, all you have to do is Google Canoa and you can see the story. But to give you a bit of a summary around the story, we'll do that. We'll put some links in the podcast information as well for you to check it out. So we don't make this shit up, ladies and gentlemen. This is absolutely true to life. But Canoa were launching wireless earbuds now, and their aim was to get in prior to Apple. Apple got their earpods out. But as we all know, Apple now have their earpods out. But they started marketing these wireless earbuds to investors and customers in, and a little bit hazy around the dates, but it might have been 2015, could have been definitely 2016, right? They started taking orders. Now, pre-orders on their website in early 2016, and they called them pre-orders. So this wasn't like a Kickstarter campaign. It was pre-orders. We've got this stock. It's going to come to you, and this is a pre-order, and we're going to start shipping them one day. So, and as you may have already started to guess, that one day never came. They closed up shop August this year, and they left behind investors and customers who'd been stung. And it really leaves a trail of caution there for many coming behind. And it leaves a trail of caution there in terms of the investors now for startups, because, you know, there's only one person that's potentially made some money out of Canoa, and we'll talk about it. I'm not going to mention names, but the founder of this startup at one stage claimed he'd sold 50,000 sets of these headphones. So, and it was estimated that he'd raised $7.5 million in pre-orders. And on top of that, had raised some capital investment as well, all of which went south the day that the company folded. There's so much to the story. There's so many little rabbit holes that you could dive into. There's so many conspiracy theories in relation to it. But it's interesting. As I said, just Google Canoa and no doubt you'll find it. But what brought about their ultimate demise? Now, they sent examples. They sent sample pods to two reviewers. So as you know, on YouTube, there's almost an industry now of reviewers who will review products. They've built up their own following, and people trust what it is that they say. And companies utilize these reviewers to create a push into the market. So, and it makes sense. Peer reviews and influencer reviewing are now really critical and important for products and businesses. We've got less people out there who trust marketing, because the old saying is that trust marketers ruin everything, and many would agree with me on there. And now there's things like ad blockers, so you can't even, in many cases, people aren't even seeing your adverts. So it's, reviews are becoming increasingly important. So anyway, one of the reviewers on YouTube had an incredibly poor review of these Canoa earbuds, right? It was very ordinary. And based on the video of that review, I think the reviewer is iTweaks. And once again, I'll put the name in the description on the podcast. But iTweaks, or Cody, I think is his first name, he detailed in quite depth how he actually really worked hard to create a good review for these guys. He made contact with them whenever he had a problem. There was installation problems. There was problem after problem after problem. And every time he encountered a problem, he gave the company an opportunity, and he rang them. So for all intents and purposes, it was a very fair attempt to try and obtain a review of a product that, you know, many people in the marketplace were waiting to hear from. So this is like August 2017. So their first shipment, I believe, was due to go to customers in 2016, April. It was then pushed back to June. It was then pushed back to September 2016. And ultimately, in August 2017, there were people still waiting. And the company continued to take pre-orders. Now, seriously, I'm not going to comment too much here on the actual business model. It would appear that, you know, as I said, there's so many rabbit holes. You know, I'm not here to pass judgment. There's so many people saying one thing and the other thing. But there's a couple of really strong lessons here. So we've got a company that's taking pre-orders. Their orders continue to push back and continue to push back and continue to push back. And then the very day of this really ordinary review out of YouTube, the company just shuts up shop, closes down its social media channels, and just disappears. And as I said, when you read the story, you'll form your own judgment, but I'm certainly not going to be talking about the actual business. Let's talk about the lesson. So let's firstly talk about pre-orders. Now, so I'm very mindful of where my money goes. I'm very mindful. So when I pay for something, I actually want to see something come back in return. And we live in this world today where people are early adapters. And, you know, we see people lining up for iPhones and have been ever since iPhones came around. And, you know, people line up to get their hands on things first. And I understand that. It's always been part of the human psyche. But, you know, ultimately, when I pay for something and many people that I know pay for something, they want to see something coming back. So we're mindful of our money. So these initial orders were placed and slated for April 2016 delivery. So my question is, why would you still be waiting in August 2017? Are we serious? You know, the Apple iPods have come out. Now, the funny thing, and I shouldn't say funny thing because people are out of pocket here, but the funny thing is Apple iPods have come out. Canoa went bust or belly up and just walked away. All of a sudden, there's now people saying, oh, this is the way you get a refund. Go through your banks, go through your credit card companies and all that sort of stuff. Man, can I tell you, I would have been doing that 2 months after the delivery had been pushed back. That's the reality from my aspect. So if it cannot be delivered, why hang in? Get a refund. Tell them where to go. Do the research. Find somewhere with a review. So the only person that gained from this seemed to be the founder of the company. And once again, there's a couple of rabbit holes that you can go down because apparently that particular gentleman has got a couple of other business opportunities, so business endeavours out there. The other thing I want to talk about is the integrity of reviews. So one review. So as I said, this product went to two reviewers on YouTube. Now, one reviewer provided the poor review, and he seems to have come out of this pretty well. He was offered money from the company. Admittedly, it was only $500. Seriously, my integrity is worth more than that. But he was offered money, and he to provide a good review. And of course, that wasn't going to happen. So his integrity is absolutely unquestioned. He gave the company every chance to resolve the issues, and in the end, provided an honest review, the only one that he could do. He's come out with integrity. And he's also provided some follow-up videos around what happened after the reviews. So, and as I said, a couple of different rabbit holes there. Some people were saying the company were waiting around for a bad review to give it a reason to pull up stumps. So whatever you want to believe, I'm not buying into it. But the reality was that his honest review, his review was honest, and it was, and his integrity certainly stayed around. Now, the other reviewer did what he called an unboxing review, which basically means a lot of nice shots of the item and pretty much a regurgitation of the marketing that was delivered from the company. So let me just explain. So he gave a review that was based around unboxing, taking the item out of the product, showing it, and basically regurgitating the marketing from the company. Now, the fact that he felt the need to post a follow-up to defend that original review, that was his review. It was a regurgitation of marketing. That was his review. So some people would have taken that in a positive sense. Now, after seeing the original bad review and the fact that Cody talked about being offered money, all of a sudden this other reviewer was getting slammed and being told he was a sellout and obviously took money, and he felt the need that he had to come out and defend his original review. Seriously, but what's an unboxing review? That's like an unboxing review. If I wanted marketing, I'd just go to the company website. So when I see a review from a person, I don't want to see a regurgitation of the marketing. You know, I just want to see an honest review. I want to see the item in use. And in this particular case, that reviewer didn't serve himself well. He's provided an unboxing. He's provided a regurgitation of marketing. There would have been people watching that review believing what he was saying about the product. And on the other hand, we've got the other reviewer detailing all the issues that are wrong with it. So integrity is critical in every single role, and especially in the role of a reviewer, and especially when they have peer influence. So once again, there's a really strong learning. You know, if it sounds awesome, do your research. You know, people are scammed every day because, you know, our mums and dads used to tell us, didn't they? If it sounds too good, it probably is too good to be true. So do your research. If it sounds awesome, do your research. Look for different reviews. You know, one of the first things that I do is that when I see a product, the first thing I normally do is I think, wow, that looks pretty impressive. I'll go to Google and just type the product name and, you know, whether it's review or whether it's scam or, you know, a word like that to try and understand what else is out there. You know, because unfortunately the world is full of scammers and there are people trying to catch you out. So just take a little bit... reduce or remove yourself from that emotional pull of needing to get it straight away and do a bit of research around the item. You know, look it up under the word scam and see what happens. Critically, if you're in a position to influence people, if you're in a position of respect or of power, be authentic, be genuine, and be honest. If it's a paid review, call it a sponsored guest or review or what have you. You know, we're all entitled to earn money. You know, there's people on Instagram now, you know, they do shout-outs. It costs you money to do shout-outs, but there would be a large segment of the population that don't realise that. So I think that if you are in a position of influence, if you are in a position of power, your integrity is worth more than anything that you can ever achieve from a product, especially when it's a product like this one that's ultimately gone bad for a lot of people. Your integrity is priceless. Your authenticity and genuineness is priceless. There's things that are priceless about you. So if you're in those positions, you know, any leader, any manager, your integrity is critical to you doing your job. If you're in a position to influence people with what you say and what you write and what you speak, your integrity is priceless. That's the story of Canoa. So the lessons there, the dumb things there are us. The dumb things that have been done in that is the review, the unboxing marketing review, and the fact that so many people pre-ordered this product and just didn't do anything about it. They kept saying to themselves, it's coming. It's one thing to be persistence people. I love persistence, but let's not have persistence that's dumb. So I hope you've enjoyed the second episode of the Dumb Leaders podcast. Please come over to dumbleaders.com. We're now live. We've got a range of great articles and great stories about dumb leaders from personal experience. We've got readers' contributions. We've got dumb leaders in the news. We've got dumb leaders throughout history. It's all happening over at dumbleaders.com. Please take the time to subscribe, review, do whatever it is. Share your stories with us, and we are more than happy to dissect them, provide you a strategy, and to give you advice on how to become the best leader that you can be. Next week, we're interviewing some more of our resident experts. I hope to see you. I hope you can come and join us again for our third episode of the Dumb Leader podcast. Until next week, I'll see you then. Bye for now.